U.S. bombers and guided missiles fell on the heads of unprotected Iraqis again today. Meanwhile, such precision-guided weapons have already killed 5 Syrian civilians and landed in Iran, wounding a number of Iranians. While the U.S. press makes little effort to report civilian casualties, members of Voices in the Wilderness and Human Shields in Baghdad give us our first clue as to the real impact of the U.S. war machine. Earlier this morning, Flashpoints made contact with Kathy Kelly for our weekly Baghdad Journal.
I'm Kathy Kelly. I'm here in Iraq with the Iraq Peace Team, a project of Voices in the Wilderness. And since the bombing began on March 20th, we've been enduring both day and night a horrifying impact of thunderous explosions and bombing, some of them quite nearby. We've been very fortunate. So far, this hotel has managed to weather the storm. Not even a piece of plaster has been dislodged. Although several windows were blown out on the floor just above the ground floor. I noticed that each of my team members are increasingly beginning to express sentiments of deep, deep anger. I'm surrounded by some of the most gentle and kindly people in the world, people committed to simplicity and service and sharing. But who could not feel intense anger as we see how the civilian population here is being attacked? Yesterday, we decided to take an action that would be a normal action. We celebrated Amal's birthday. She had just turned 13, and she's a budding and brilliant and bright teenager. And in spite of the fact that bombs were exploding overhead, we went ahead with a picnic lunch across the street on the riverside. And we had barbecued chicken and birthday cake and Pepsis. We had large blue balloons with white doves, and the kids played duck, duck, goose, and it was great for them. They were children ranging in age from 4 years old to 16, and they really needed the release of being able to run and play and just cut loose for a while. One of our members, Shane, has experience as a clown. He did handstands and backflips, and then the kids started doing likewise. And we had strung colorful paper cranes all around the little picnic area. And we gave them all a large banner, a blue flag that many of your people, I'm sure, have seen in peace demonstrations. It just carries a large globe, one world. And Amal said that what she wants for her birthday is peace. And that was a very wonderful event. The skies were very overcast because huge clouds of billowing smoke fill the air, some coming from oil fires that have been set in trenches around the city in a rather desperate hope of self-defense on the part of people in Baghdad, and also smoke from targets that have been hit. And as the bombs exploded overhead, we could only realize and acknowledge that there's no place that's safe. You can't be safe inside. You can't be safe outside. I think just about everybody I know is sleep deprived. It's very hard to sleep through the night. Here in this hotel, our only bomb shelter is a basement that reminds me of my parents' basement in our south side home before they remodeled it. It's not very deep, but in the corners of that basement, I think there are safer places, and we make sure that the children and some of the families can head into those corners, and the rest of us, when the bombing is really extreme, try to go down to the second floor corridor or sit in the ground floor in a little tea room. We've become very, very close to the people in this hotel with whom we're sharing this experience. And Dennis, right now as I speak, one huge explosion just went off and the window is rattling in this room. I'm up on the second floor of the building typing up my notes from a hospital visit to two different trauma centers that received casualties last night and have been taking in the casualties since the bombing began.
U.S. officials say that the civilian casualties have been light and that they're trying their best to avoid civilian casualties. What can you tell us from your visits and what you know about that?
Well, I heard on a radio interview last night that the U.S. calls the war successful because there have only been 500 casualties. But I would like someone to first recite the conditions of each of those people before they dare use the word success or refer to children as collateral damage. And if they went through that recitation, they'd be talking about children who are now paraplegics or who have a paralyzed leg or who are hooked up to colostomy bags. and writhing in pain. They'd have to talk to doctors who've been up around the clock trying to cope with the emergencies, hoping to dismiss as many patients as they can to make room for more. And they'd have to talk to everybody who's anticipating far worse casualties in the days to come. So I don't think it's at all proper to say that U.S. people should help the U.S. soldiers by assisting them with child care and home repair without first considering that we've asked these young soldiers, many of whom desperately need home repair and child care in the United States, to loan themselves to kill and possibly kill, and in order to get that child care and that home repair, to destroy the homes and the lives of innocent people here. Baghdad is a sprawling city of 4.5 million people. 46% of Iraq's people are under age 16. And let me tell you about some of those children today. Hossam Khaf is 13 years old. He's from Baghdad, Jadida. He's at the Al-Kindi Hospital today. He was injured on Friday on the 21st of March, and now he has a colostomy bag. He was writhing in pain, having sustained a severe injury to his bowel at 9 o'clock p.m. on Friday, the 21st of March. He lives in a multiple-story building, and when the family realized that a huge bomb might be coming their way because several others had just detonated and they heard a plane coming by, they left their flat and went on to the street, and that's when he was hit by a shell. And the father of the family, Abu Hossam, said that there is a military hospital and a military training place 45 kilometers away. But that's quite a distance from his home. He said most of the casualties are children and elderly people and civilians. And he asked us, what do they have to do with fighting and war? Next to Hossam was a 20-year-old young man named Hamad Kapim. And he sustained an injury to his leg and an arterial injury as well from the shelling. He was in the courtyard of his house, and he lives in the Al-Baladiyah neighborhood. His father said, God save all the people in the world, and God save all the countries of the world from this destruction. And then young Hamad said, we haven't gone to the U.S. to hit them. They came here. He said, last night children were admitted to this hospital, and he asked us why. We also saw 63-year-old Kabim Wadi, who had been out shopping for his family when he was hit by a shell and his abdomen was punctured, his intestine is perforated, and he sustained injuries to his leg as well yesterday at 5 o'clock p.m. in the evening. And he was breathing laboriously and really too sick to talk any further with us. 18-year-old Ahmed Saba was inside his home at 9:30 at night on Thursday, March 20th. He received wounds and fractures to his arms and legs. He's got an external fixator that they're using for the compound fractures. And he also said most of the casualties and the bombings are being done to civilians. And his father asked, what crime has my son committed? He's a victim, not a criminal. We also spoke with an elderly man, Mr. Najim Moham, 70 years old, and he was just walking on the street when he was hit by shrapnel. And he's had chest fractures, and both of his shoulders are fractured. Now, all of these people are in a great deal of pain and uncertainty. A 10-year-old Fatima from Radwania is the daughter of a farm laborer, but she lives in an urban area. And she was in their home when the family again felt that they were in too dangerous a situation and tried to run outside, but then the wall fell down, and that's why young Fatima now has multiple fractures in her leg. She was hit on Friday evening on the 21st of March. And the family wasn't able to get her to the hospital because they didn't have any transportation. So they just had to try to nurse her through great pain until they could get a ride to the hospital the following morning. And her father said, we are like brothers and sisters to the U.S. people. We don't attack American people. Please get the message that this is an invasion that has nothing to do with democracy. these are the stories that we're hearing over and over again as we visit hospitals and as we're in touch with families. I'm very close to a worker here in this hotel named Abu Hassan. And Abu Hassan came to the hotel 2 mornings ago, and he said that all the windows in his home in Saddam City had been shattered and fallen to the floor, and that the ceiling fan had crashed down onto the floor. And he described how the children in his house crouched down, and they put their hands over their heads for protection. So when the United States talks about the idea that the U.S. soldiers will show how noble and dignified the U.S. Army is, I can't for the life of me understand what is noble and dignified about traumatizing children, causing civilian casualties, and creating in Basra a situation of great terror, because we hear that they are now on their third day of living without access to water and electricity. I lived in Basra for 2 months, and I know that the Basrans can sustain living without electricity. They've undergone that during the sanctions. But there's no family that can live without water. And this is a humanitarian catastrophe. Dennis, your listeners must petition and beg the U.S. to decide what it's going to do about that catastrophe. The International Commission of the Red Cross must be allowed in there to repair the water system.
We're speaking with Kathy Kelly. She's talking to us from Baghdad.
One of the things that was very sobering at the hospital today was that the doctor with whom we spoke said that they anticipate a great deal of bombing tonight. I'm not sure why, but they were making haste to dismiss the patients who could go home so that they'd have beds ready and available. And we're told that the U.S. troops may be coming close to Baghdad tomorrow. People are worried about being subjected to a state of siege beyond what they've already experienced under the economic sanctions. And we're amazed at the courage, the ability to control fears that people here have expressed. But, you know, if my own team members are saying that they feel increasingly angry, intense anger over what's being... Imagine how people here who've sustained punishment and brutalizing, exhaustive punishment through sanctions and warfare for 12 years are feeling right now. And yet I want people to know in San Francisco that many, many people are aware that 1,500 people were arrested in actions of civil disobedience. They know about the huge turnout in New York City. They're aware of and grateful for every action that's being taken across the United States and in other capitals of the world. And so as we're heartened by that, we also want to say bon courage to everybody in your listening area that's readjusting their schedule and trying to figure out how they can take actions commensurate to the terrible crimes being committed here, nonviolent actions that may yet convince the United States war makers that this is a war that nobody wants.
Kathy Kelly, the United States government says that they're going to do everything they can to facilitate humanitarian support in Basra, where, as you said, the electricity is out. I think the water has stopped. What do you think about the U.S. plans for humanitarian support for people they say they're just trying to liberate?
Well, I think all of us have to liberate ourselves from any government's decision that they can sever the bonds between us. The ordinary people in this country who mean no harm to people in the United States are people just like ourselves, and they don't deserve the kind of punishment that's being inflicted on them. The idea, who are we kidding when we hear this idea from Mr. Bush that they want to secure Iraq's oil fields for the benefit of Iraqi people. We've got to remember that over 12 years of economic sanctions, 500,000 children under age 5 were killed by an abysmally failed policy. There's no reason whatsoever to believe United States' insistence that it cares about the humanitarian concerns of people in this land. There's no reason to believe that the United States has got uppermost in its mind ways to preserve security and life and well-being here when night after night thousands of cruise missiles have been dropped on Baghdad and on surrounding cities. We must continue to assert the right to mediation, the right to have peacemakers approach the mediation table and leave the warlords out of this discussion.
And, Kathy, you were saying that just a little while ago a missile or a bomb hit close by to you. Are there bombs still falling? Are you still feeling the percussions? And what kind of damage has been done? How close have the bombs hit to where you are?
Well, we're right across the river from a major palace and several other government installations. So bombs have hit quite close. Close enough to frequently shake the building and rattle the windows, and two windows on an upper floor above the ground floor were blown out. I'd say, in a way, we're safer than most people because we do have large stores of bottled water, and we're not worried about running out of food. You know, we feel the same precarity that people feel all around this city and certainly out in surrounding areas. At this point, we no longer scramble down a few floors when we hear bombs explode because, you know, we've got writing to do in our rooms, and actually, you know, you can't be running up and down the stairs every 20 minutes. But I would say that there's been intermittent bombing in what General Tommy Franks perhaps described best as a mosaic going on constantly round the clock. And then there have been some 3 and 4 hour stretches over the last several days when the bombing is constant.
Kathy, as you alluded to earlier, the U.S. ground troops are fairly close to Baghdad. We know from trying to investigate what the operation would be like that the U.S. military was studying how the Israelis acted in Jenin and other West Bank cities. It sounds like there could be some pretty terrible encounters. Do you know, do people expect there to be street battles? Is there going to be resistance by Iraqi troops? What do people anticipate in terms of this kind of street battle for Baghdad?
Well, people anticipate that the numbers of wounded and dead will be much higher in the days to come. And the doctors have certainly indicated that that's what they're anticipating by trying to make more hospital beds available. I guess I can just say that along with agonizing uncertainty, there is rising fear and anger. I can only offer a guess right now, but it's my impression that people who wanted very, very much to preserve bonds of friendship with ordinary American people, the people who held out hope that someday there might be peaceable relations with America, might be increasingly turning to feelings of seething resentment and anger as they see what America is doing to their cities, what America is doing to their homes. We ourselves as Americans are still treated with incredible graciousness and kindness and generosity. But I don't think that the usage of B-52 bombers that cause, multiple thuds as the bombs are dropped almost in a leapfrog fashion, that the use of thousands of cruise missiles that whiz over the city and then explode, that the usage of cluster bombs is going to soften people up here to feeling a welcome for American liberators. You know, I love Chicago. I miss it very much. But I honestly cannot imagine what Chicago would be like if Chicagoans were subjected to the kind of bombing that people have experienced here since March 20th. I also can't imagine that Chicagoans would welcome with kindness people from the country launching such an attack. So I have to say, Iraqis are unusual people, very, very unusual people in their ability to endure this and to keep their sanity, to keep their composure. So what will happen in the days to come is very uncertain. Street-to-street fighting seems unimaginable to me. I don't know people that are violent in this city. I honestly don't know people that I can imagine picking up guns and shooting at other people. But I have to say they've been subjected to a pressure cooker set of days, and they want to defend and protect their children with all their hearts.
You know, Kathy, our reporter, Ziad Abbas, was over the last couple of days at the border between Jordan and Iraq, and he was going there because there were reports that the United Nations was preparing for an onslaught of refugees to this date that has not come. But what Ziad Abbas has learned is that there are many, many people from Arab countries around the region that are trying to get into Iraq to go and stand with the Iraqi people. Have you heard about this?
No, actually, that's news to me. I'm aware of an influx of people that came, two days ago. I met several from South Africa and from Beirut and from Morocco who had come in, but I wasn't aware of masses of people at borders. I certainly can imagine that people throughout the Arab and Muslim world watching what this country is being subjected to are not going to want to say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it. I think that the humiliation that people are feeling throughout the Arab world is probably something that gives rise to a sense of it's now or never, that they have to at some point draw a line and say they won't accept U.S. domination that comes at the hands of incredible bludgeoning, bombardment and punishment and the possible catastrophic consequences that can happen. It's true, I think, that the refugee camps have not filled up, and yet there are many people that will be displaced and will be within their own homes rendered without the means for subsistence. And this is something that the United Nations has not come to grips with, and the handful of non-governmental organizations that are here have got no capacity to meet what they are expecting will be a humanitarian disaster.
And finally, Kathy, you have spent a lot of time on the ground in Baghdad. You've taken many risks. I really would like you to speak to our listeners about why you're doing what you're doing and what you're hoping that people can do at any level.
Dennis, since October, we worked as best we could to prevent a war. And I know that many of your listeners, most of your listeners probably, have done likewise. And we haven't managed to prevent a war. But we feel that we have a big responsibility to further the anti-war movement by communicating the cares and concerns and the experiences of ordinary people here. We want to be voices alongside them. If we can offer some small measure of comfort, well, that's a privilege in this situation. We want to remain. We don't want to leave. We have no idea what's coming or what the next days and weeks will bring. But we firmly believe that people here in this country deserve and must have a voice that gives expression to what it is that they're experiencing. And we're not confident that the U.S. media will air it or will be able to glean it, because we don't find that average ordinary reporters here have got access to families and to a means to accompany them.
All right, Kathy Kelly speaking to us on the ground in Baghdad. We do thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, please know also that your fellow San Franciscans, Charlie Litke and Wade Hudson, will want their greetings communicated. So thanks, Dennis.
All right, stay safe, Kathy. Bye-bye.